The GAA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GAA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
But these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their asses for 10 years.
So then there were two, Conan. We have the dream final, Cara Finn versus Dr. Crokes. It's what we all wanted, except if you're from Guido or from Mullinahakta. It's the dream final, two brilliant footballing teams that showed it again on Saturday how good they are. And finally, we're going to see them on the best pitch in Ireland and the heavyweight super clubs in football. We couldn't have asked for any more. No disrespect. Guido, in fairness to them, they put it up big time and they can hold their heads up high. And Mullinahakta, in fairness to them, made it a game a lot longer. When Buckley went, saw red and they're 3 points down, you're thinking, Jesus Christ, yeah, this could hardly. They were 1-33. So at least they kept that game interesting when I was thinking this could be, you know, yeah, they could be under pressure here. So we saw two good games. We saw a full good game with Guido Cara Finn, and we saw a first half of good competitive football in the other one.
It's good, like, you just started to believe a little bit when you're watching that Mullinahakta game. It was like, geez, like, as you said, like, when Buckley gets sent off, like, you could hear the crowd as well getting so excited, and the two goals that went in. And I think Crokes missed a goal chance early on. I was like, geez, this could be the day. Like, you know, they might have just caught them here. But yeah, like it is a dream final, and it's like the last two champions as well. So it's the two best teams in Ireland.
Like, everything. You know. The Johnny Buckley thing was interesting. What were TG Cahir doing not showing us a replay of that? You could kind of see it off.
Yeah.
So they didn't show any replay. I don't understand that. I would have thought it was in midfield for a fetch, for a kick out.
Yeah.
Surely there's footage of that. Is this a policy of theirs? Because, like, I mean, didn't see replays of everything I would like to have seen in the first game either. But that Buckley thing, this is a midfielder being sent off for a challenge that I could see on the top of the camera, but you didn't even see a replay of the bad kind of view to even get a look. Dr. Crokes are saying there was no strike whatsoever. They're going to try and get it, make sure he's okay for the final. It was a coming together for a kick out, which happens all the time. I didn't think there was much to it from the tiny little kind of view you might have got of it.
Yeah, I assume there might have been a reaction, and, you know, when the camera sort of went, it sort of followed on to the right then, and then Buckley sort of went off screen. I was like, I wonder, did he swing back or something?
Yeah, but Buckley looked to be behind him maybe. I think he said, I saw a quote, I think it was one of the selectors said, Johnny Buckley and his man were pushing each other and your man just went down and the referee probably sent him off for a striking offence. There was no striking offence as far as we're concerned. So, like, I mean, they're fairly serious about that. So whether, if there isn't, I don't understand it. If there is video footage of it, why would they not show the replay? If there's none, well then, Dr. Crokes are going to be in trouble getting them off if there's no video evidence, unless they recorded it themselves, which they probably wouldn't if this is on national television.
And the ref was talking to the linesman as well. It was getting a tight from McGilligott and John Keegan. Like, they seemed to be really targeting him from kickouts. Like, obviously it's going to go to Buckley. Like, they were all over him. Like, so I just wondered, did he react at some stage? And then when he put his hand up on the referee's shoulder, I was like, oh, has he done something here? Like, you know, it just seemed like there was nothing in it. Like, you know, I don't know what you saw.
I've never gone down the road of trying to brown nose a referee.
No.
It's not quite, it's like if a guard catches you speeding and you try to brown nose him and he still gives you the ticket. You feel like an awful little weasel afterwards. Like, I didn't need to do that and I didn't get what I wanted.
Yeah.
The referee is not going to change his mind if you put your hand on his shoulder and say, "Ah, ref, what?" He has decided. So you're as well off just stand there and take your punishment like a man and stop trying to stop. And if a guard pulls me in for speeding, I just, "Yes, officer, I realise I was speeding." I don't give him the sob story that he actually wants, because they just want to that's what they want, and they're going to give it to you anyway.
You have no emotion, really.
No emotion. I'm blank face. I look straight ahead. You've caught me. Well done.
Fair play.
I know how this deal works. One thing that I thought the umpire falling over was funny. This was doing the rounds on Twitter after the game. Yeah. The ball went up so high. I admire his commitment, because this is an umpire that was taking his job very seriously, and we've got some issues with umpires on this show that they don't probably move and get a decent view. We saw on the hurling, Tony Kelly scored a point, and it was definitely a point, and it's not like they're even straining themselves even at the far post, but this lad really wanted to get a look at this.
Yeah. this umpire is the best umpire in the GAA. Remember, yeah. 2 years ago, Kerry played Dublin down in Tralee. They drew 13 each, I think it was. And he was the umpire that went sprinting down to the corner when Paul Geaney had the ball in the corner. So he left his post and he went running down just to make sure the ball wasn't going over the line or
really?
Not. And then as Geaney was trying to sell dummies, he was sort of shuffling along beside him. Like, you know, it was like he was defending. And he's actually, he used to play for Tyrone as a goalkeeper, Martin Conway, you call him.
Right.
So, yeah, he's got previous of being like really committed to the cause.
Martin Conway, remember that name. Listen, if we could all have umpires that were as young and sprightly and could move running backwards as fast as him, even not knowing where he's going, showed a lot of courage too going backwards, because you don't know, you could get struck from behind there.
Could be a cameraman, anything there as well.
He just no care for his own personal safety just to get this call right.
Eye on the ball all the time.
Eye on the ball, yeah. So I think I was we're going to talk to Gavin White in part two, the roadrunner, I call Gavin White, because he never stops. Like Kieran Malloy as well, we'll talk about them in part three for performance of the weekend. I don't know about these fellas, the GPS stats they must have, but Gavin White's coming up in part two, so we'll focus on the Gweedore Cara Finn game. And Gweedore obviously got it back to 2 points with 10 minutes to go. Cassidy was outstanding, and I think it was just experience. Like, I mean, I think Gweedore could hold their heads up high. They played well, they did fine. Like, Cara Finn are a better team than them, that's the reality of it, but they kept it honest right till the very end, and they could have gone away on a couple of different occasions, but they didn't. They showed great kind of character, and they're a good team as well. And it was just, I think it was Cara Finn's experience. The minute they got it back to two, you see Cassidy going one more point kind of on the camera, and there was no more point because this is Cara Finn just lifted a little bit then. And it's Gweedore's first ever semi-final, we know that, and Cara Finn have been in loads in recent years, so like, I mean, there's no doubt that experience counts at that squeaky bum time in the game like that.
Yeah, absolutely. There was one stage, I think Ian Burke caught a kick out and he just stood there, he just took the mark and stood there, and then
Ian Burke.
Yeah, he was out and he caught the kick. It was around the 48-metre mark. He got the mark anyway, but caught it and stood there with the ball, and then just like Gweedore fella came in late. And then it was just like there was another opportunity then to waste another minute, because Ian Burke just sort of held his head then and went down on his knee, because the guy did come in and hit him, like, you know. And it seemed like that for the last 15 minutes, even though he got 2 points behind. You're like, oh, here we go. And then Cara Finn just took control and they slowed everything down and they held the ball.
Ah, they're brilliant at holding the ball. But when they do decide to attack then, they're intricate passing. Yeah. Like, they're like Crokes. Crokes maybe play a little bit sexier, the passes, but Cara Finn's hand passing and angles of runs and support, they have enough lads up there that can do this. Maybe it's just, you look at Mayo, you look at Kerry, you look at Dublin, you look at Cara Finn, you look at Crokes, and maybe they're doing that because they have the talent to do it, but you'll never have good forward moves unless you have a few forwards running off the shoulder. But their support play, everyone is always there as an option. And if you're coming in and there's a couple of fellas back as sweepers, sure, without options you're at nothing. You're just recycling. Now, they played on the outside, but when they decided to go in, they went in with their good purpose.
Yeah, they really stressed the pitch as well. Like, I think Jason Leonard sort of summed that up. He was always out in the sideline and then always darting in. It wasn't like he was taking a ball on his heels every time he took it. He was coming off the sideline and trying to get away in, and if it wasn't there, he came back out or whatever. But and then like the second goal, was it Ian Burke's hands?
Yeah,
I've never seen his quick hands. I mean, like, I know we talk about it all the time, but
and the finish then was practically a lob. It was just lobbed over the goal.
Amazing. Ian Burke, like, must be the best like inch for inch catcher, and like just has the best hands, no doubt, in DA, and catches it, and before he even brings it down, it's gone onto somebody else. There's always a runner coming off him as well. Like, it's just, they are just a joy to behold, and hand passing has never looked so good.
It never looks so good, but they're not afraid. Like, Sice will give it. Like, they're hand passing, but with a view of when the minute this opens and we're kicking it in, and then we'll run off Burke. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's not like we'll hand pass and we
get
might get through. The kick pass is what they want. Now they'll be patient, and if the hand pass thing opens up because someone comes across at a lovely angle and somebody comes alive, then and here we go. They'll take that any day, but they're usually looking for the two lads inside, and Burke's always shown they have it down, really, don't they? Because they've such a great forward line and they've such great options of how to hurt, you know what I mean, how to hurt teams.
And they really, like, they really counteracted, like, Gweedore's strengths as well. Like, I think Gary Sice was getting interviewed afterwards and he's just like, oh yeah, we had a plan. Like, because they were asked about Darrow Boyle and Oran McNeilish and how quiet they were, and he just sort of highlighted the four boys. So Liam Silk was obviously picking up McNeilish a lot, but he said about Dahi Burke and Ronan Steed and Leonard as well. He said all four of them were sort of taking turns at watching these two and their runs and stuff. So just that idea, like, you know, that they would be that slick. And then you saw at one stage, I remember Silk dispossessed McNeilish, as soon as the ball went down, he was away then the other side trying to make McNeilish come back after
him. He kicked
him.
A great score. Now, I thought McNeilish came into it. Now, Silk got the better of it, but it was a, like, I didn't understand that from Guidor, because McNeilish has been midfield all year and they put him centre forward to give. Now, I'd say Carafin might have put Liam Silk on him anyway, but that would have messed up their kind of shape a little bit, whereas putting him centre forward just let Liam Silk mark him as a centre back and didn't really mess up. You know what I mean? I was like, why do that? It was very obvious that we said on Thursday show that they'd put a wing back or somebody onto, but they just gave them that man marking job, and Carafin's team stayed the way they wanted it. Do you know what I mean? It was didn't seem like the smartest thing to do.
And it didn't, it didn't give Burke or Steed a headache then as well, because they didn't have anywhere else to go. They could just keep playing midfield
as normal. Like, they were marking Eamon McGee, who I thought played fairly well, and who's the other Boyle. Yeah. So, like, I mean, the midfielders just, I'd say the two Carafin midfielders were like, oh, lovely.
Yeah.
McNeilish, I'm not following McNeilish.
I thought I was going to be playing centre back, even, if still
having to follow him. So, I mean, don't give the opposition what they kind of want, you know, because McNeilish had been midfield all year.
McNeilish as well. It's a 20-yard free, but I think it was your man, is it Colm, Eamon Colm, took a 20-yard free at the start and missed. And it's why is McNeilish hitting all these? Do you know, and your man had a bit of a routine. And
oh, yeah.
I don't mind routines, but the idea of a routine is to try and slow the whole environment down and get you back to kicking normally. But his routine was doing this weird thing with the ball as he's running up, and that's not how you would kick normally. Your routine's supposed to be to get you to a stage where you can just kick as you normally would.
Nice, and
he was
sort of
throwing the ball up as he was running. And do you know, you could sort of pick out all these little moments and that doesn't cost you a game. But I was thinking then when there was 15 minutes to go and there was 2 points in it, it's there might have been a point in it here if McNeilish was just taking all the frees. And if you've got Orr McNeilish in your team, let him kick all the frees.
Yeah. Carafin had goal chances too, though.
Yeah,
I mean, they did open them up. And, the Guidor goal shouldn't have been a goal at all. Your man McFadden, the cornerback, must have taken 15 steps.
Yeah.
How is that? He didn't play the ball once. Now, you can understand sometimes, and we've talked about this, how referees seem to turn a blind eye. You take your 4 steps, you take a good shoulder, and they might give you another few to come out of that.
Mm.
Or, you ride a challenge and all these kind of things, and you kind of think that you should be allowed to be fouled, and that's rugby. We've been down this road. But this fella didn't even play the ball or bounce or sold the ball once. He just kept running.
Yeah.
To any man who hasn't played Gaelic football and to know that the rule is 4 steps, you're not being fooled by anything here. It was a terrible, terrible decision. He just kept running.
Yeah.
And you're saying, this is the most obvious overcarrying kind of foul I've ever seen.
And that makes defending worse as well, the longer this goes on. Overcarrying isn't a thing anymore. Refs don't blow it as long as you look convincing. If you don't hesitate.
And he did look convincing.
Yeah, he was
really
I'm going
did.
Straight here. It's very positive and I'm going and then I'm going to pop it off. But just referees, as long as they don't punish it, it sort of ruins defending, because you're not waiting for the bounce anymore or the solo to make a tackle. You're just looking to stop him, and normally that's just push him in the chest or get your hands around him, or somebody comes in from behind. And it is all just about stopping the man now rather than trying to get the ball. And the longer they don't bring the ball out, then the more chance of that happened.
Yeah, no, it was definitely a weird one. What did you make of Lundy's black card? I thought it was very, very harsh. I think we see forwards all the time going down and just bringing a hand down with them. And if we're going to give black cards for that all the time, I think he did bring the hand down with him, but I think he let it go.
Mm.
And I think McFadden Ferry, I think he made a bit of a meal out of it. I think, I don't know, maybe by the letter of the law, I think players, when they fall, might. McFadden Ferry was going down anyways, regardless whether Lundy had him. I don't know. I just thought it was a harsh black at that stage of the game.
Yeah, I think, and again, they showed a replay of that, but they didn't sort of show a close up or anything. It was hard to see exactly what Lundy was doing with his hand, his left hand, when he was down. I don't think
when he hit the ground, he didn't stay holding him.
No, he was looking the other way. Maybe his foot was there, but I don't think it was that. That's cynical. And your man, McFadden Ferry, had turned him over. He was going to get his free anyway because they had sort of stalled together.
Yeah.
So the ref just didn't need to be intervening there with a black card. I don't know. Maybe it's a problem with the black card rather than the ref. I don't know. But when the ball gets turned over in the middle of the pitch, they've got the free now anyway to go and play it. And then I don't know. I thought it was a little bit harsh on Lundy.
I just think that because you often see now where forwards are trying to be clever and they'll take on the defender. The minute he puts his hand in, they'll go down holding his hand. Right? We know that. Now, referees have got a bit clever with that, so they're not giving freeze for it. So are we going to start seeing black cards for that now? Because technically, if that Lundy thing was, if you're saying, right, well, you try to drag him down with you, that's a black card offence.
Yeah.
I've never seen a black card for that, except for Lundy's one there, which Lundy kind of, maybe he locked his hand a little bit in when he was falling, but immediately let it go when he hit the ground.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't think that's a black card offence. I really don't.
It was a Tyrone Donegal game in the Ulster Championship a couple of years ago, and it was at Tyrone's. The ball got turned over in Donegal's area and Tyrone were attacking again, but somebody got clipped. So they're about 140 yards away from goals and they got clipped, and it's a black card, you know, but it shouldn't be a black card,
yeah,
sort of thing. So maybe it just comes back to the rules. But as you say, like, you look at soccer now, like people leaving their leg in hoping they get tripped up. Is that going to start being the case now, where you sort of leave something in and hope somebody is caught pulling you back or something?
Yeah.
And it is a natural reaction. If you just lost the ball and you see something, you're just going to hit it, like, you know, and then if somebody clips up, then you
play
get a black card.
Play act on it, yeah. I saw Dean Burke win a lovely free just before half time. Like, I mean, this is as clever as come, where he just turned his body completely around and took it in the back and then fell forward. There's nothing that's not immediately lovable about Ian Burke. He just plays Gaelic football mentally on a different level to any other player in the field. And we said this about Galway. He sees things way before everyone else. He makes things happen. And even if this is just coming on the loop around the lad, he might be on the 45 and there might be bodies back. You say, this is going to be positive and he's going to make something happen out of this. He's going to see a run that somebody else hasn't seen. He's just a sensational player. They're so lucky to have him because he just makes any forward line tick.
It's almost like he sees everything in like a bird's eye view. Do you ever watch his movement? Like, it's like he sees the whole defence and where they're going.
Yeah.
So when they're all running in and he's always shuffling back out and finding the space and always free. Like in that one, I think it was Gary McFadden that fouled him. Like, that was just a case of here's an all-star and here's a good club player.
Yeah.
Do you know, but it's like, he just
looks, too smart for him. Just too smart.
He's so calm all the time as well. Like, on the ball and off the ball. He's just always in control of every situation.
Yeah.
He's a gem.
No, he definitely is. There's no doubt about that. I thought it was a funny one, Dan McBride punching the Currafin player in the kneecap. Like, that was one of the most stupid things I've ever seen. Like, he was lucky to get away with it, because at the end of the day, that's a punch, whether that's in the face or whether it's in the leg. He just got frustrated and he punched him in the knee. Like, I mean, how sore is that going to be on your own knuckles? Like, I mean, punching a fella in his kneecap. It's just dumb for starters, but he got away with it anyways. But, like, I mean, I think that's just... all you can say about that game is that just Currafin were that little bit better, and that's the reality. And Guidoor have absolutely nothing to be ashamed of. To stay with them, they stayed with them. We said it would be close, didn't we? We all said Currafin would just shade it, but it would be close, and it was close right up until the end.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it was really good. Two passes I want to draw attention to before we move on. Gavin Burke for Currafin, I think it was a pass to Steed or Dahi Burke, I'm not sure. I think it was
Dahi
Steed.
Burke, yeah, Dahi Burke slipped up, didn't he?
He slipped.
Yeah.
But this point was on, and instead of going for the obvious point, he just played a beautiful through ball. I don't think we see that. This is a number 10 in soccer, Bergkamp in Tonry. This is these kind of beautiful balls. I don't think we see it that often in GA, because you often think when the point is on, you're going to take it. You don't see the disguised sneaky passes. Maybe because you don't have true balls, because there's no offside, and you know what I mean? You don't probably have it. But this was an opportunity. And then Gavin O'Shea pass for the Kieran O'Leary goal chance, where he's coming in the end line and he just whips it back out to the edge of the D.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
That's like another soccer one, like, and pull back.
It was a pullback type thing. Like, I mean, two passes at club level by two club players that were just out of the very top drawer. Like, I mean, that's just super, super Gaelic football.
Yeah, and you really do have such an opportunity there, because you watch, I think it was definitely the Gavin Burke pass, like Andy Moran's pass. Like, the defenders all stop. I think it was Eamon McGee this time in the middle, and you just stop when you see him pulling the trigger, because you're like, I'm not going to stop putting it over.
Yeah.
And then he doesn't put it over, and then suddenly somebody has been alert and they've ran on in. Like, everybody stops, so there is such a good opportunity there. That pullback is a class one. Like, how many times do you get caught on the end line and you're like, ah, Jesus, and you're trying to bull your way through.
And the great thing about that pace, there was a lot of pace on it as well. Like, he whipped it back across, didn't he?
That, like, so it should, like, it's almost like if you start working zonally, like, if a player's here, this is where you should be now. So if somebody's on the end line, get somebody now to the edge of the D, because the ball's going to come.
Don't
back
start thinking of ways of ruining these passes.
No, I'm thinking of ways of attacking here. Like, so the attacking team, like, if he's here, you get back. Yeah, actually, it's a good way to defenders to stop it too.
Yeah, I want someone posted at all times in this D for this beautiful pass, and we want to cut this out of the game.
Forget it, everybody back.
I saw Kieran Donaghy was tweeting about this, and this is Nigel Owens. So it was from a rugby game. It was on TG Cahir, and it was Nigel Owens who went into both dressing rooms before the game. He stood in the dressing room, in the middle of the dressing room, with the rugby lads all standing around him, and he explained, you know, what he was going looking for the game, met the players. And Kieran Donoghue, he says that the GAA should learn a lot from this. It sets the tone from a ref's point of view and builds up the bond between players and officials. It was done when we played the Aussies down under in the international rules. The way the refs down there talk to the players is top class. I don't see anything wrong with doing something like that. I think referees and players should have more of a cordial relationship. I think referees, because they're all different, should come into the dressing room and say, lads, I don't want any messing today because I'm going to be very serious. These are my bugbears. I don't want to see it. And you're being told here now. So yeah. We don't want any crying when this happens. I'm very harsh on the black card with whatever. You know what I mean? Yeah. I'm very hard on picking a rolling ball. I'm very harsh. Any verbals today. Now, lads, I'm telling you this here now so there can be no complaints. Don't come complaining to me out there.
Yeah.
Anyone talks back to me out there is on a yellow straight away. Now, are we all okay with that? And the players will say okay with that. Now you've taken responsibility with the referee for not doing that.
Yeah.
Like, immediately you're going to change your attitude. You know what I mean? And the referees explained it in a mannerly fashion. We're all human beings here, lads. We all want to have good games. I want to have good games. I'm just letting you know what I want from ye to make us all be able to play best. And if a referee talk, because some referees have awful arrogance problems. Like, I mean, they don't explain to you. Not that you deserve an explanation, but I think from a referee's own point of view, being a sound person and knowing when a player is frustrated about a decision and giving him some bit of feedback on it really calms him down rather than ignoring him when he's really...
Yeah.
So who was it on the... It was Tom Ryan plays for Limerick. You wouldn't have been watching the Kilkenny-Limerick game yesterday. You're our football correspondent. But he was caught for over-carrying and he was livid. And he starts jumping up and down, giving out shit to the referee. Referee just ignoring him, not even entertaining him. There's about 10 minutes to go here. So then the camera pans to everyone shaking hands at the end of the game, and here's Tom Ryan back in the referee's ear. But you know what I mean? Like, and I've done this loads of times because they're not telling you. Like, even if they say, wasn't sure about that one, Woolly, but I had to make the call. You were like, oh, geez, that's fierce, honest, and sound about it. Like,
yeah.
I mean, you know, that was borderline there. That was borderline, but I made the call on it. Now you're going to have to leave it at that.
Yeah, this is how I saw it.
Yeah, that's how I saw it.
Any of my favourite referees, that's exactly what you get from them. And when they make a mistake, they'll sort of tell you, or not, like, they won't say they made a mistake, but they'll tell you what they thought they saw.
Yeah.
And I remember one time getting my nose broken and like sort of complaining to the ref, did you not see that? And he came over and saw the blood and he was like, Jesus, I'm really sorry, I didn't see it. And you're like, oh, you can't be angry at him then. Like, you know, he's just being honest. He's telling you, I am just calling what I see. Like, and that idea of going to the changing rooms beforehand is good because they also hold themselves to a certain standard then as well. Like, because they said what they're going to be looking out for and what they're going to be clamping down, and it means they won't get sort of carried away with the emotion of the game then as well and start flip-flopping. They'll remember that I've said this to the players, so I'll have to try and keep
No, it definitely is. I think it should do, and it's done in the international rules, means it's done in ASL, Australia, AFL, and, like, I mean, definitely it, and I like genuinely think it's like everything with players. If you tell them, If they take ownership of their behaviour, it's like in a squad, if they take ownership of what standards are need to be set and they all have to say, this is what we don't want to do. Says, lads, this isn't me, this is what you've decided. Once you've decided, then you're in trouble. You have to live by what you've decided. Obviously, the issues arise there in early meetings where certain fellas create these standards that maybe everybody might not be able to follow. But anyways, that's another. I want to briefly talk about this David Brady tweet. I don't want to go too much into it. It made no sense. It was so long ago. You're entitled to celebrate a win. They would have worked hard since then. Like, everybody, if you can't celebrate a provincial title with an 8-9 week break to another, it's nonsense. It's the type of nonsense, and we've all heard them, that some drunk fool in your clubhouse would say after a loss. Yeah. And all the players would say, would you shut up? You don't know what you're talking about. Now, you have to understand, that's the standard of analysis of that tweet. This lad's paid for his opinions by Off the Ball. Like, I mean, you have to, like, I mean, this great news for us. You have to admit that the competition in the podcast market actually uses this fella that is tweeting stuff that a swerve job in your club might say, you know, because that's the kind of guff that would go on late at night by somebody that was drunk saying, well, Jesus, you know, you might shouldn't maybe have so over celebrated. You know, like, it's stupid.
It's absolutely
dumb. So they all rounded on him anyways. And, like, I mean, I don't know. It doesn't make any sense. But for a professional pundit to come out with something like that. I've told you before in Croke Park, this is the type of level of punditry this lad comes out with. I've said this on the podcast before, so this is when Aidan O'Shea is put in full back to Mark Kieran Donaghy. So this is one of the bravest tactical calls that maybe since I've started doing punditry professionally that I've ever seen, right? So this was just so out of the ordinary. He said in Croke Park, and getting paid good money by Croke Park, interviewed at halftime, doesn't really matter who plays where or what tactics. What matters is the result at the end of the day.
Nothing contributes to that result.
That's it. Like, that's the but that's his style of analysis. So, like, I mean, that's just the reality of it. And he's preaching about winning to the McGees and Cassidy. Like, this fella's lost four All-Ireland finals.
Yeah.
It's just mind-numbingly dumb.
And the idea that, like, you know, Cora Finn would only beat a team because they were drinking 10 weeks earlier. Like, Cora Finn are the All-Ireland champions.
Yeah.
There's probably been, like, hardly any team as good as them ever.
Yeah, and just like, got over them. They had him back to 2 points. And Kevin Cassidy, the fella who, throughout all the videos, was arguably man of the match.
I saw Paul Hertie get on to him from Cross McGlen because all the All-Irelands they've won was a 5 they've won, and he won an All-Ireland with Armagh as well, and he was like, we celebrated every Ulster title that we won, and of course they did, like, you know, especially when it's 10 weeks earlier. Not like it is absolute drivel.
Oh,
like,
it's, you know, it's so stupid. You see, you have to wonder where the likes of this fella's head is at, and Dick Clerkin and these lads, and they just make such stupid calls and things.
Like, I was really surprised he didn't delete it. I just thought he would delete the tweet, like, maybe, and realise how stupid it was.
Maybe he wanted the attention. Maybe he's not getting phone calls about doing punditry this year, and he wants to get himself out. I don't know how these lads' minds work. Like, I mean, what's it like to be a pundit who isn't very good?
Yeah.
Maybe that's the...
I wouldn't know.
All right, we'll leave it there and we'll come back with Gavin White.
I work as a policeman at Garda Síochána down in Store Street, and I'm coming back out and there's a cohort of loyal Tyrone fans still up in the stand as you come back out. And they're roaring at me, "Hey, Coffrey, you free state bastard." And next thing I hear, "You have no fucking jurisdiction up here."
Okay, so Dr. Crokes are back into the All-Ireland final after beating Mullaghlin Naoctocha on Saturday, and TG Cahir's man of the match, Gavin White, joins us on the line to talk about this one. Little bit of panic stations halfway through the first half, I think, Gavin.
In fairness to Mullaghlin Naoctocha, they started very strongly and they kind of threw everything out. I suppose there were 20 minutes in, we were under the cosh a lot with the second goal going in, especially when Johnny went off, but... No, we kind of regrouped and gathered the forces again and drove on from there with a very strong end to the first half, I suppose. And we took on then into the second half as well with another strong 10 minutes that kind of created a cushion for us, I suppose, into the last 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, that was the big winning of the game. How you responded to that red card and going a man down and 3 points down. You know, you kicked some great scores towards the end of the first half and then the start of the second. And the game was pretty much over at that stage.
Look, we created the cushion, I suppose, and we kind of kept on that at arm's length for a lot of periods of the second half. As you said, like after the red card, like I suppose everyone kind of brought it up another level. Like, so David Todd came out there to see, like, and had a serious game of field. Tony inside, I suppose Tony and David kicked some serious scores along with the rest of them. Looney had a great game, and Kieran O'Leary. Look, we need to score from everywhere, like, and we needed everyone to push the car as much as they could, especially when we went down to 14 men.
Yeah, no, you definitely did. Come here, what's the story with the Johnny Buckley red? Because TG Cahir didn't show any replays of it. What's your take on it?
To be perfectly honest, I didn't really see it when it happened, and I haven't seen any footage of it yet. So, we'll be hoping there is some footage, but I suppose when the second goal went in, we were all kind of under pressure that we were all kind of looking to see what we could do next. Like, so we didn't really take much notice of it until the ref brought it back. All I can remember is Shane kicking the ball out to that. He was, like, sitting there in the 45-yard or halfway line, and the referee was pulling it back, and we were unsure what had happened. So, look, as I said, I haven't seen anything of it yet, and like, we're just hoping that there's going to be something that will help us.
Yeah. What was Johnny saying in the dressing room? Like, was he saying there was no strike? I presume it was for a strike or something, that, or he wouldn't have got a straight red. It looked like a kind of a coming together in midfield, but it was so far off the actual action, it was hard to tell.
Yeah. Look, Johnny is probably the most honest player I've ever played with, both with Kerry and Emma Crokes. Like, so I'd be absolutely shocked if there was a strike in action. Like, but as you say, like, yeah, I think it was just maybe a coming together or something. To be honest, that's what I think it won't be like.
Right, okay. Come here. I meant to ask you about being the favourites, because like, you were 1-33 against Mullinahakta at the weekend, and you're favourites pretty much in the Kerry Championship and throughout the Munster Championship. What's it like just going into every game like that, having to obviously get up for it as much as the opposition are going to be up for it to play you?
I suppose we were favourite going into the game, like, and all that. And look, Mullinahakta had us under the ropes there very, very early on. Like, I suppose we set our standards so high up down in Crokes, like, that we always aim to master our standards and try to get even better if we can. Like, so I suppose that's a big thing with us. Like, that's kind of our motto, that we're playing to get up to our standards and playing at our level. That, you know, we kind of don't really look into what the public think or whatever that might be like. But as you say, yesterday, like, everything was going to come in and throw the kitchen sink at us, like Mullinahakta did the weekend. Like, it's just up to us again, like, to play what we can do. And I suppose, look, that's what we aim to do with every game, really, to tell you the truth. We don't really look into the public eye or anything like that. Like, we just concentrate on ourselves and do as best
as
we can do.
You play unbelievable football. Like, I mean, it's just love watching you play, and it must be a very enjoyable team to play on. You know, like, I mean, some of your forward play is incredible, like lovely little diagonal passes and lovely runs off the shoulder. And then you have yourself bombing forward from the half back line. Like, I mean, you're not restricted in any way in what you want to do creatively.
Yeah, look, I think a lot of that comes down to Patsy and the work he's done, not only at the senior level, but was right throughout the club. Like, I can remember when I was maybe only 8 or 9, like, and Pat was training me down in Cork. Like, so I suppose it has started from there. Like, really,
look, some of the play that we played yesterday, I suppose that they adapt to the 14 men, like, and I think we did so very effectively. But it's brilliant to be playing with some serious players, like, with especially with Tony there during the weekend. Like, he was on fire. David Shaw, and then you've Cullen coming on, like, which is another massive boost to us. Like, so yeah, look, it's very enjoyable when things are going right, and thankfully they have been going like this for the last number of weeks, and hopefully we can carry forward now to Paddy's Day.
So you play wing back and you play centre back. They're the two positions I've seen you playing, and you play centre back the exact same way as you play wing back. You just you go forward and you put your man on the back foot. Is that your? I have to tell you, I played wing back a lot, and I could never adapt to centre back for some reason. I wasn't sure when to be holding and when to be going and stuff. But you seem to have it figured out.
I'm not sure if I haven't figured out. No, to tell you the truth, but they're definitely two different, completely different positions. Like, as you say, with holding back and all that. Like, I suppose my running going forward is a big factor in my game. Like, and I suppose at centre-back, you're more conscious of that and whether you're going forward and when you have to hold and things like that. Like, so I suppose it's just, you want to challenge your marker as much as you can, I suppose, and put them in the back foot, whatever way that might be. Like, but no, of course, at centre-back, you've massive responsibility to hold the house and make sure that you're doing your main duties first and that's defence, like, you know. So, definitely on the wing and the centre, they're the two completely different positions, I suppose. And it's just about reading up the game and reading up what's in front of you that kind of dictates what to do, I suppose.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I mean, but that is an important part of wing back play, isn't it, you know, Gavin? Because, like, I mean, it's almost like a game of you versus your marker, and when you go forward, you can play and get a score, you have him rattled, and the sideline might be telling him to watch you, and, you know, you're thinking in your head, I have this lad now. Whereas at centre back, if you're told to hold a little bit more, that power's taken off you, and you're, you know, I don't know, it's a completely different dynamic.
Yeah, of course, definitely. As you say, like, I suppose it just comes back again to wherever you can get that extra little edge, I suppose. and how you can put the opposition in the back foot. Like, I suppose the last thing on against Molinacta, it was kind of a different kind of scenario with the 14 men and all that. Like, so I suppose everyone was trying to do that bit extra to compensate for the man down. Like, so I suppose attacking the last day was probably a lot more than was probably a usual centre back would do. Like, but I think that's kind of the scenario and leading up what was in front of us. In game time, really, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Do you think, when you get on the ball in the half-back line, do you think, Jesus, we're 3 points down, I need to make something happen here, you know what I mean, and go forward? Would you be processing that in your head during the game?
Well, I suppose whenever you're getting on the ball, you want to make an impact some way, whatever that might be. I don't think really scoreline comes into it much. Like, you're constantly just thinking about the next ball, what can I do here to improve the team, get a score or whatever, like... I think it's whatever is in front of you, really, that you're just trying to make an impact whenever you do get on the ball. Like, and so you might get on the ball 5 or 6 times in the game, like, but it's what you do with those 5 or 6 balls that's going to make a difference.
Yeah, exactly. Come here, what are your GPS numbers like? I reckon they must be off the charts. You don't have to tell me the secrets of the Kerry GPS numbers, but you have to be in the top 3 or 4, are you?
I would like to think so, and we don't wear no Crocs, but I suppose we're up fairly high up there right now, to be fair.
So you're in the top 3 or 4. You're in the top 1 or 2. Well, can narrow it down even further? Can I?
I don't know about the top 1 or 2, like, but I'd be aiming for the top 5 or 6 in there.
Right, okay, definitely. Great. So, come here, what's it like to be missing out on Kerry? Because, like, we saw with Cara Finn last year, only Ian Burke got back on the Galway team. And, like, I mean, it's just a poxy way that the structure of the year works, that the club doesn't end up before Christmas and then everyone start again. Mm-hmm. So, like, I mean, where did you watch the Dublin game? Or are you in with the squad? Or are you given a full break? Or how is it working?
I suppose, in fairness to people and the management, they've kind of left us off, I suppose, after Christmas with Croke solely. Like, before that, we were just tipping them out at the gym, and, like, you know, obviously you want to be playing both club and county, like, but realistically you can't really do that. Like, you can't be playing GI. It's just very hard to mix both of them together, especially with injury and all that, like. So in fairness to them, they have left us go, and they have, you know, given us our time with Croke, and they wish us all the best, like. But I saw it looking from the sideline, like, they've been doing very well. Like, it's, I suppose, being the up loss in South Park last week, like, you're itching to be a part of it and go playing, like, and, you know, playing off in South Park and stuff is a massive occasion, like. But look, I suppose when you're in all Ireland final with the club, like, you kind of, you're looking forward to that no more, I suppose.
Well, that's true. So where would you have watched the Dublin game? Would you have gone with a couple of the club lads just to watch it on the terrace, or?
Yeah, I suppose it's the 2 or 3 club lads really went up to the terrace. Myself, Shay Murphy, and a few other club lads would have went up and watched the game together.
What did you think of your first season with Kerry then? So, like, you made your debut against Clare last year. You hammered them, then hammered Cork, but then the wheels came off a little bit and probably didn't turn out to be the year you had hoped with Kerry.
Definitely to say that. I suppose I was kind of in a funny situation. I kind of missed all the league, and I was pushing to get back, it started very brightly for us, in fairness. You know, all the games kind of had their highlights on their own, like, and I suppose, as you say, the Galway game, it didn't really go quite to plan, whatever the reason for that might be. But look, I think the Clonus was a highlight, the Munster final was a highlight. Obviously, the Clare game was a highlight for me personally, because it was my first senior Kerry game, like. Yeah, it ended disappointingly, I suppose, in a funny way, winning the game down in Clarny, but you're out of the championship at the end of the day. Like, it was weird, like, but
yeah.
I suppose that's the whole idea of the Super Race now. Like, it's just giving a different dynamic. First season, I suppose it was. You can take a positive and you can take a negative from this, but I think from a positive point of view, there was a lot of young players built into the team, like. Obviously, David Clifford, Shawnee Shea, there was Jason Foley, John Michal Byrne, Shane Murphy. There was a lot of players that came into this that wouldn't have played before. Like, and I think that's probably one of the main positives we can take from our season last year. Like, and we can build on that for this season and the season coming forward.
When Eamon Fitzmaurice stepped down, he released a statement and he kind of referenced that the pressure that was on the team, and he stepped down because he didn't want that pressure kind of being transferred to the younger players in the squad. He wanted you to be able to develop freely without that, you know, without that on your shoulders. Did you feel pressure last year? Had it gotten a little bit toxic down there, or were you kind of sheltered from that?
I think we were kind of sheltered from it. Obviously, there was a bit of pressure, right? Like when you're going up to Clone, it's a do or die game. Like, you know, I suppose from our point of view, we didn't really want to do that. But we wanted to be top in the group and all that. Like, so maybe there was a small bit of pressure from that point of view that we underperformed against Galway and we really, really needed a result up in Clone. So I suppose there was a small bit there. Like, from my own point of view, I suppose we were kind of just, you know, we were living the lives, like we were from a professional point of view, like we're doing what we love and playing football, playing with Kerry, like it's first season inside, like so. Look, there's obviously going to be pressure with any kind of team, like especially when you're first year in and all that, like. But I suppose there was a small bit of pressure right after the Galway game, just to get a result, like. And I suppose maybe that was coming more from us than maybe the outside the camp, because we knew that. So there was an awful lot more in us than this. We couldn't afford our season to be ended up in Monaghan. But look, I think we all performed very well up in Monaghan for all the younger lads that played that day. Like, and I suppose it kind of showed that we kind of maybe thrived under the pressure. But look, as you say, I think the pressure came from ourselves mainly, I would say, more than the outside.
Right, okay. Come here, so you have Corrifin next. It's the final everybody wanted, and they owe you one because you beat them in the Gaelic rounds. You really surprised them that year, because Crokes had made a habit of losing semi-finals up until that semi-final, and Corrifin were defending champions, and they're a super, super team like ER, and you completely shocked them that day.
I suppose going into that, there was a lot of nerves in the team. Like, as you said, we lost a couple of semi-finals coming into that game. Like, so I suppose it was kind of a small bit of a monkey in the back that we wanted to try to get off ourselves. And, you know, I think that was one of our biggest performances that we've shown over the last couple of years against Carfin, and it did shock them, I suppose. But I've no doubt they're going to be well prepared in St. Patrick's Day, like any other team that would be playing in the Peninsula in Croke Park on 17th of March. Like, so look, we did, I suppose, going into that game, the team was an awful lot different than what it was in previous years. There was a lot of younger fellas coming into the team that kind of renewed the team as well. But I suppose we were known for our bench that year, and some players like Tony and Hall to bring on, like, and you know, and I was playing with Kerry now, like, and Tony's playing some serious football as well at the moment. Like, so when your fellas like that to come on off the bench, they did that really help us that year. And I suppose it did take Carfin by a shock, but I'm sure they won't be like that this year.
Yeah, and Jordan Kiley came in off the bench, I'm pretty sure as well. Yeah. And you started. You're the kind of four that have made Crokes turn from semi-final, kind of going out at semi-final stage, to actually being at the very top table. Yourself, Tony Brosnan, Jordan Kiley, Michal Burns, all around similar age. I think Tony Brosnan was born at a very unlucky time, right at the end of the year.
He was, yeah.
Other than that, he'd be around for minors in 14. But, like, I mean, the four of you have kind of been that little bit of a spark that Crokes needed.
Yeah, look, I suppose we all believed the four of us when we played football coming up to under-16s and minors. Edmund O'Sullivan was over, since he was the Sceptres this year, so, like, and he kind of brought us under his wing and showed us in the right direction. And look, thankfully we were able to bring that into the senior level so quickly. Like, look, and everyone knows that the step from minor to senior isn't an easy thing to do. Like, but we were very thankful that, you know, Pat, with the likes of Pat and O'Sullivan and the likes below, that they were to help us along and bring us up very, very quickly.
Yeah, just before I let you go, that's interesting with Pat O'Shea. So he's won All-Irelands with the Kerry seniors. He won All-Ireland club with you, Dr. Crokes, and still he has time in between those two, I'm sure, to train you when you're under 8, under 10 in the club. Has he always been involved with you coming up through the ranks, or would he just help out with underage now and then?
Well, I suppose when I was minor, he would have been tipping around, I suppose. He would have been manager, I suppose. It was maybe 2013 that he took over the minor setup for a year. But yeah, I'd look, I don't know where he gets time from to do so. Like, he'd be trying the senior team 2 or 3 times a week, and then he'd go off to Crofts on Saturday morning and train the under-8s and under-10s. Like, so it's a family flipping by him, and you know, it's paying dividends at the moment.
No, it definitely does. Come here, best of luck against Cora Finn in the final, Gavin, and best of luck with Kerry this year.
Thanks very much.
Is the little dink fist pass from a crowded area into that D we're talking about, where Bernard, I've talked to Bernard about, Bernard's very patient, but this little dink ball, you know, the one in a crowded area where it's a fist pass, the weight is taken over, hits the ground, and it bounces into a fella's chest, and there's consternation then in around the D and in around that area. Watch for this in the semis and the final. Do you know what I'm talking about? That little fisted ball that's just bounced in a crowded area, but it gets to the body.
You have said it 3 times.
It's in around, but you're looking at me, you're looking
out
at
of
me
a crowded area, isn't it?
You're looking at me with such a confused head in you. It's like I was talking about you trying to get a point in coppers or something there in a crowded area. Yeah, watch for it.
Paddy Power performance of the weekend, Conan. We're going to start with Kevin Cassidy. I know we mentioned him at the start of the show. So he got 1-2 off Kieran Fitzgerald. Kieran Fitzgerald, now he's pushing on in years, but he's a big, strong man, and you were thinking he would be a good physical matchup for Kevin Cassidy. Still think Kevin Cassidy is massively underused. I don't think he's used enough. His 2 points were out of the top drawer, proper full forward points, where he's winning the ball in front, showed left, pulled back, put it over with the right. The other one showed left, turned right. His goal, I don't think his goal should be underestimated, what a great finish that was. Exactly. With a bullet with his left foot. So his 2 points were his right foot. Genuinely, if Kevin Cassidy is thinking of retiring, don't.
Oh my God.
In that role, there's another 3 or 4 years for him. Easily. He's a ball of energy. When he gets the ball, like a completely different type of player to Ian Burke, but when Kevin Cassidy gets the ball, you're thinking something's going to happen here now for Guido. Like, I think it's criminal how they underuse him, though. I really do. Like, their game plan should be get the ball early to him and have Keane Mulligan, who's got great pace, bursting past him. I think they can have a better game plan up front. I do think they can get more out of that.
It does, yeah. On the one hand, like, they're such good runners, and that's like their game plan, and it's
they're using the runners further back the field. I'd rather see these Carroll and Mulligan running off Cassidy and actually change their game plan. Now, they probably think they don't need to change their game plan, they just won an Ulster, but I'd like to see more variety to their game plan then, rather.
Yeah, it seems to me like McNeilish and Mulligan seem to be the ones who are thinking about getting into him and always looking up.
McGee, in fairness, too.
So, but the rest of them are always just running and popping it and running and like, you know, and like, then you look at the space, like sometimes when the ball goes in, you're like, how was this not played every time? Yeah. Like, it's just always this big gap in front of them.
And even sometimes I was watching Cassidy off camera, and he might be doing this with his hand, as in he wants one over the top.
Yeah.
Not one over the top did he get one.
Yeah.
And he could do that. Like, I mean, he got one half chance from Neil McGee that was going for a point, but that wasn't.
Was he going for a point? I thought he was.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I thought they sort of looked to his side to try and play it.
Neil McGee gets notions when he gets up that far. But in fairness to him, he has scored them in Croke Park. Yeah. He scored one in an All-Ireland final, hasn't he?
When he goes, he normally scores.
He normally
doesn't miss.
So that's why I think Neil McGee was going for it. But, like, I mean, just give Cassidy one over the top. The great thing about Cassidy, he's got so much fire in his belly. That ball hits the ground, he's going to win it.
Yeah.
Like, do you know what I mean? He's burly and he's got that kind of never say die. He's going to win that ball even if it breaks. He'll win his own break. Do you know that kind of...
And that's why you have to... That's why he wins so much ball in front as well, because you have to mark him from behind. Like, you can't mark him from the front because he'll catch everything above your head. It's too much of a risk. And Fitzgerald was always behind him and Cassidy could get it in front. But, like, that's a good point that you made about winning his own break. So, I mean, like, it's 2 or 3 times where he didn't win the ball cleanly.
Yeah.
And he still managed to hold 2 boys off, poke it out the other side and pick it up again. Like, it's just complete destruction when he gets
destruction.
It.
Don't retire. Just don't, because he's very good to watch. And that's what frustrates me, in that I don't think he's used enough. I mean, Gary Sykes scored 1-7. He was outstanding. And sometimes when you look at the Cora Finn forward line, you don't necessarily think Gary Sykes the danger man. You think Farrahers, you think Ian Burke, you think Lundy kind of first. Sykes, I think he played in the corner. It's probably hard to tell on television. It looked like he was playing corner forward. It was a deeper role than usual. He gives lovely ball. He's a great football brain. His goal was out of the very top drawer. Like, we've all played soccer. How difficult the technique was what he did there. To bullet that into the top. Like, I mean, that was not an easy chance. It was just class.
After picking himself up off the ground as well.
Yeah, and he's done this in All-Ireland finals. I reckon Sykes, while not nationally known, I reckon in the Cora Finn club,
he's worth his weight. You know what I mean? He's really appreciated in his own club.
He seems like a real leader, of the team as
leader,
well.
Leader,
And he's taking the freeze. Before he takes him, he's telling everybody where to stand because we're getting ready for the kick out.
Well, that makes sense,
So I'm going to stand right here after I kick it. And it's just mad. Like, again, you talk about routines and stuff, but he's just making sure everybody's ready for the next play before I stroke this over.
Yeah.
And then we'll win it again then. Like, but yeah, I'd say he's just an absolute legend in Corfin.
Yeah.
Like,
and he gives some lovely ball into the forward line as well. So he's top class. They just have so many ways of hurting you. There's so many different types of forwards that can hurt you in different ways. Gavin White, we talked to him in part two. Like, I mean, the Roadrunner, he's just non-stop. The speed of him is unbelievable, and it's going to be interesting with the Kerry half-back line now, who's working with Tadhg Morley, Paul Murphy and Thomas Sullivan, who's playing really well, where Gavin White fits in. He will have to fit in. So, like, I mean, it's interesting. I'm not sure you could potentially go with Gavin White, Paul Murphy and Thomas Sullivan, because you'd maybe need Morley to mark a Kieran Kilkenny or something, do you know?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure any of the three of them can play in the full back line, where it'd be an awful waste of the talent. So there's somebody out of... Because I think Morley will be needed for his man-marking ability. I think maybe White, Murphy and O'Sullivan... three into two might not go there.
I was thinking that Peter Kane might find space for one of them in the half forward line, but then there's far too many forwards as well.
Paul Murphy could potentially play the wing forward role, because Jonathan Lyon is playing that and he wants a working half forward, and Murphy's obviously played that role for him at Fitzmaurice before, at centre half forward and at wing forward. So that is an option. It's definitely an option, because White has to come back into that team. He's just an incredibly powerful dynamic halfback.
I'd say he makes actually your teammates lazy, because it's like, get it to him and we're out of defence. You know, he's the sort of boy, once he gets it, everybody else relaxes, because he just takes a pass three people and goes. That's such a rare talent, and it has to be played in anything, like including carries. Like, it's just too good. Like, it's too easy for him to get out of defence, and that's the most important thing nowadays.
It is breaking into that clear open space. Yeah. That's the most important thing. Tony Brosnan, we're big fans of Tony Brosnan on the show. Ever since last year when he scored that amazing tally in the Kerry Championship, the whole Crokes full forward line, actually Shaw, O'Leary and Brosnan, they scored 13 points. 11 of them were from play. So, like, I mean, they ran him up, but Brosnan just has pure class in his feet. Like, I mean, the different points he scored. One was from a diagonal ball over the top where it was an impossible angle. His back was to the goals and he just knew where the goal was. Mm. So a real finisher. Another one was where he showed it out with his left hand, brought it in. And do you know, he's just a beautiful player, a beautifully balanced player. And with the guaranteed supply of ball you're getting with the Croke style of play, it just must be a They're similar, but they're different in the way. I think Dr. Crokes are that little bit more aesthetically pleasing on the eye. Cara Finn are still very good as well.
More functional.
They're more functional. I think Crokes are more flair. They're more like, they go, Jesus, these lads are...
Yeah, that's true. Like, every time I watch Tony Brosnan now, I just be like, oh, he is just far better than I ever will be. Like, you know, and I just get so jealous of how good he is. And like you're saying about, he knows where the post is. He seems to know where every defender is around him as well. And it doesn't matter how little space he has. He's got like the best sidestep in Ireland probably. Like, and that show and send somebody 5 yards away from him, comes back in, puts it over. He's just another lethal player. I think, like, looking at him, I don't know, like, do you think he'll get into the Kerry team? Like, it's going to be hard to see him not in the Kerry team.
See, it's very hard to get on that Kerry team, because you've got Clifford and Geaney in there straight away.
It's pretty good, all right.
Like, I mean, and the way they're maybe playing at the moment, they could be leaving those two inside. You know what I mean? I don't see Brosnan or anybody else playing. You see, James O'Donoghue might not get in. He'd be up against James O'Donoghue if they're playing an orthodox three-man. I think the way Kerry are lining up at the moment, they'll go just with Clifford and Geaney inside. And there's some great options there for diagonal balls, long balls, whatever way you want it. Unless they play Brosnan or James O'Donoghue on the top of the D in front of these two lads. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you have Tommy Walsh to factor in there as well. Like, I mean, they have serious options, Kerry have, of different ways to hurt you. But Brosnan's definitely in the mix for coming on for Kerry. I don't see him as a starter. I see Shaw in the mix for Kerry in a few years' time. He's got a load of potential. Obviously, Kieran O'Leary has been there before and is just still top class. Like, it's interesting, Kieran O'Leary obviously would have been way behind Gooch in the pecking order all his career, and now he's starting full forward ahead of him.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, I think that must be weird for all. It's obviously weird for all of those players. Last up on the list is Kieran Malloy. So this lad's another road runner. Like, I mean, this is the new breed of halfbacks now that never stop running. So Malloy, he's obviously eye-catching with his long hair. So he always seems to be, because teams drop off. So when Malai gets on a ball early in a move, he's in his half back line. He's usually getting it from a standing, you know, nobody's marking him.
Yeah.
He usually carries the ball forward at pace because he only knows one way. You would never see Burke, or you never see Malai kind of coming infield, or he just goes straight. Then he'll move it on. And invariably at the end of every move he's in on the 6 yard box. So like, I mean, so I think it was Steed that had a goal chance early on for Cora Finn. It was Burke to pass it, I'm pretty sure it was Malloy to pass it back to him. Burke was in the mix. Then you had the Sice goal, he was in the mix for that as well. And then for the Farragher goal, if you see that, you just see the replay of that. Who's behind him? Malloy. Just in, like, he's on the end. He's, yeah. Now we're not talking this lad's getting up the support for a kick, kick a point running. He's on the 6 yard box at the end of nearly every move. And then for the kick out, this lad's heading on back into his wing back position and he's on you.
Sprinting back as well.
Sprinting back. Like, I mean, this is just on a different level of fitness, I reckon, the likes of Gavin Burke. But I think even, or Gavin White, I think even Kieran Malloy, he isn't even on a different level altogether, because obviously with Gavin White, he carries the ball an awful lot. Whereas Kieran Malloy will carry it a bit, but then he goes without the ball an awful lot. So Gavin White wouldn't end up on the 6 yard box if he hasn't carried it to there. Do you know what I mean? He did it yesterday, but he's carrying it. There are different types of attacking wing backs.
It just seems to be every single thing, he just follows it, like, up the pitch. Like,
yeah.
You know, even like the ones he doesn't start, he's just following in just in case and then sprinting back out. He's just a racehorse. Like, he doesn't tire. Like, and you watch even the Sigerson Cup highlights, I know it's a little like level below, maybe not from club, but like the amount of goals he gets in that as well, the amount of times he's there, like, and he has a shot blocked and somebody else puts it in, and always just standing around the 6 yard box in the highlights reels as well. Do you know where it is? It's unbelievable. Like, and he just doesn't ever seem to slow up.
No, definitely not. Right, the winner of performance of the weekend, Paddy Power performance of the weekend, is Kevin Cassidy. I think at his age, I think that performance, he did everything possible to keep Guido in it, and I think if he got a bit more ball, he could have done a little bit more damage. So 1-2 against Cora Finn on the losing team. Outstanding performance by him, and that's it. So we're down left to two. I meant to ask you about, so we're talking about club today, so you had a big club game at the weekend. Talk to me about it. You were on the field with your hero, Dear McConnelly.
Never meet your heroes, will they?
Did you get a paw on him? Did you land anything on him?
Do you know, like, I've always dreamed of playing against Dear McConnelly, and I don't know why.
So you're wing forward, right?
I'm wing forward, yeah.
And he's centre forward for the other team. So you would have come into contact, no?
Yeah, a couple of times. One time I genuinely didn't get a finger on him. He actually just sidestepped me, and by the time I reshuffled and got my feet set, he was gone to the other side and swinging it over off his left. And, you know, it was one of those ones where you can hear the team around you going, "Ah, Conan, come on." And I'm like, "Oh, it's Jim McConnelly, give me a break." Like, I'm trying to get my hand on him. And another time I forced in the hand pass, so I saw that as a success.
But, okay, would you not have gone now, shot in at his ribs there or something, and let him know that you're there, that you're to
I
be taken
never
seriously.
Do that to Jim McConnelly. Respect him far too much. My only tactic was to tell him how much I loved him and hope he would turn around and empty me because of it. But
so he was in good form, was he? Anyways?
I was. Yeah, he scored four, three off the left. It doesn't really matter for him, I suppose. But and just pinging some passes and just looks in great shape as well.
Yeah. Did you shake his hand at the end of the game?
No, I didn't.
What's going on here?
I didn't spot him. I didn't know where he was at that stage, and I was trying to just, you know, not make too big a deal. We lost the game, so didn't want to make it about me and Dermot.
Well, you could have done. You could have said, Dermot, if you're sitting out the year, we've got room for you on the show if you want. There, you could have done a bit of networking for the show here.
I was polite enough to him during the game. Never mind after it. Like, you know, I wasn't going to just give him all that respect, but. Ah, yeah, he's a good player, I can confirm it.
Okay, right, well, listen, I'm glad we got that confirmed. Right, that's all we have time for. We'll be back on Thursday where we preview the National League. Talk to you then. All right, good luck.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we'll put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. For exclusive content from their GA ambassadors and other high-profile contributors, check out news.paddypower.com.